And now, the conclusion of The Legacy, Chapter 25, In the Palm of Her Hand. Matron Benray sat back easily in the cushioned chair, her withered fingers tapping impatiently on the hard stone arms of the seat. A similar chair, the only other furnishing in this particular meeting room, rested across from her, and in it sat the most extraordinary mercenary. Jarlaxle had just returned from Mithril Hall with a report that Matron Benray had fully expected.
"Drizzt Duodin remains free," she muttered under her breath.
Oddly enough, it seemed to Jarlaxle as if that fact did not displease the conniving matron mother. What was Benray up to this time? The mercenary wondered.
"I blame Verna," Jarlaxle said calmly. "She underestimated the wiles of her younger brother," he gave a sly chuckle, "and paid for her mistake with her life."
"I blame you," Matron Benray quickly put in. "How will you pay?"
Jarlaxle did not smile, but simply returned the threat with a solid glare. He knew Benray well enough to understand that, like an animal, she could smell fear, and that smell often guided her next actions. Matron Benray matched the stern look, fingers tapping.
"The dwarves organized against us more quickly than we believed possible," the mercenary went on after a few uncomfortable moments of silence. "Their defenses are strong, as is their resolve, and apparently their loyalty to Drizzt Duodin. My plan," he emphasized the personal reference, "worked perfectly. We took Drizzt Duodin without much trouble. But Verna, against my wishes, allowed the human spy his deal before she had put enough distance between us and Mithril Hall. She did not understand the loyalty of Drizzt Duodin's friends."
"You were sent to retrieve Drizzt Duodin," Matron Benray said too quietly. "Drizzt is not here. Thus, you have failed."
Jarlaxle went silent once more. There was no sense in arguing Matron Benray's logic, he knew, for she needed no approval, and sought none, in any of her actions. This was Menzoberranzan, and in the Drow City, Matron Benray had no peer. Still, Jarlaxle wasn't afraid that the withered matron mother would kill him. She continued with her long tongue-lashing, her voice rising into a shriek by the time she was done with the scolding. But through it all, Jarlaxle got the distinct impression that she was enjoying herself. The game was still on, after all. Drizzt Duodin remained free and waiting to be caught, and Jarlaxle knew that Matron Benray would not see the loss of a couple dozen soldiers, male at that, and Verna Duodin as any great price. Matron Benray then began discussing the many ways that she might torture Jarlaxle to death. She favored
skin-stealing,
a drow method of taking a victim's skin one inch at a time, using various acids and specially designed jagged knives. Jarlaxle had all he could handle in biting back his laughter at that notion. Matron Benray stopped suddenly, and the mercenary feared that she had figured out that he was not taking her seriously. That, Jarlaxle knew, could be a fatal mistake. Benray didn't care about Verna or the dead males. She apparently was pleased that Drizzt was still on the loose. But to wound her pride was to surely die a slow and agonizing death. Benray's pause went on interminably. She even looked away. When she turned back to Jarlaxle, he breathed a sincere sigh of relief, for she was at ease, smiling widely as though something had just come to her.
"I am not pleased," she said, an obvious lie. "But I will forgive your failure this time. You have brought back valuable information."
Jarlaxle knew who she was referring to.
"Leave me,"
she said, waving her hand with apparent disinterest. Jarlaxle would have preferred to stay longer, to get some hint at what the beautifully conniving matron mother might be plotting. He knew better than to contradict Benray when she was in such a curious mood, though. Jarlaxle had survived as a rogue for centuries because he knew when to take his leave. He pulled himself up from the chair and eased his weight onto a broken leg, then winced and nearly fell over into Benray's lap. Shaking his head, Drolaxel picked up his cane. "Triel did not complete the healing," the mercenary said apologetically. "She treated my wounds, as you instructed, but I did not feel that all of her energy was into the spell."
"You deserve it, I am sure,"
was all the cold matron Benray would offer, and she waved Drolaxel away once more. Benray had probably instructed her daughter to leave him in pain, and was probably taking great pleasure in watching him limp from the room. As soon as the door was closed behind the departing mercenary, Machen Benray enjoyed a heartfelt laugh. Benray had sanctioned the attempt at capturing Driz Duarden, but that did not mean she'd hoped it would succeed. In truth, the withered matron mother was hoping that things would turn out pretty much as they had.
"You are a fool, Drolaxel. That is why I let you live," she said to the empty room. "You must realize by now that this is not about Driz Duarden. He is an inconvenience, a moss gnat, and hardly worthy of my thoughts. But he is a convenient excuse,"
Matron Benray went on, fiddling with a wide dwarven tooth fashioned into a ring and hanging on a chain about her neck. Benray reached up and undid the clasp on the necklace, then held the item aloft in the palm of her hand and chanted softly, using the ancient dwarvish tongue.
"For all the dwarves in all the realms, heavy shields and shining helms, swinging hammers, hear them ring. Come forth, my prize, tormented king."
A swirl of bluish smoke appeared at the tip of the dwarf tooth. The mist gained speed and size as the second slipped past. Soon, a small twister stood up from Matron Benray's hand. It leaned away from her at her mental bidding, intensifying in speed and in light, growing as it stretched outward. After a few moments, it broke free of the tooth altogether and swirled in the middle of the room, where it glowed a fierce blue light. Gradually, an image formed in the middle of that swirl, an old gray-bearded dwarf standing very still in the vortex, upraised hands clenched tightly. The wind, the blue light, died away, leaving the specter of the ancient dwarf. It was not a solid image, merely translucent, but the ghost's distinctive details, the red-tinged gray beard and steel-gray eyes, showed clearly.
"Gandalog Battlehammer,"
Matron Benray said immediately, utilizing the binding power of the dwarf's true name to keep the spirit fully under her command. Before her stood the first king of Mithril Hall, the patron of Clan Battlehammer. The old dwarf looked at his ancient nemesis, his eyes narrowed in hatred.
"It's been too long," Benray teased. "I'd walk an eternity of torment as long as I'd the guarantee that yourself not be there, drow witch,"
the ghost replied in its gravelly voice.
"I'd—"
A wave of Matron Benray's hand silenced the angry spirit.
"I did not recall you to hear your complaints," she replied. "I thought to offer you some information that you might find entertaining."
The spirit turned sideways and cocked his hairy head to stare over his shoulder, pointedly looking away from Benray. Gandalug was trying to appear indifferent, removed, but like most dwarves, the old king was not so good at hiding his true feelings.
"Come now, dear Gandalug," Benray teased. "How boring the waiting must be for you. Centuries have passed as you have sat in your prison. Surely you care how your descendants fare."
Gandalug turned a pensive pose over the other shoulder, back toward Matron Benray. How he hated the withered old drow. Her talk of his descendants alarmed him, though. That much he could not deny. Heritage was the most important thing to any respectable dwarf, even above gems and jewels. And Gandalug, as the patron of his clan, considered every dwarf who allied himself with Clan Battlehammer as one of his own children. He could not hide his worry.
"Did you hope that I would forget Mithril Hall?"
Ben Ray asked teasingly.
"It has only been 2,000 years, old king."
2,000 years!
Gundalug spat back disgustedly.
"Why don't you just lay down and die, old witch?"
"Soon,"
Ben Ray answered, and nodded at the truth of her own statement.
"But not before I complete what I began 2,000 years ago. Do you remember that fateful day, old king?"
she went on, and Gandalug winced, understanding that she meant to replay it again, to open old wounds and leave the dwarf in perfect despair.
"When the halls were new, when the veins ran thick, gleaming walls with silver slick, when the king was young, the adventure fresh, and your kinfolk sang as one, when Gandalog ruled from the Mithril throne, Clan Battlehammer had begun."
Compelled by the magic within Matron Ben Ray's continuing chant, Gandalug Battlehammer found his thoughts cascading back along the corridors of the distant past, back to the time of the founding of Mithril Hall, back to when he looked ahead with hope for his children and their children after them, back to the time right before he met Evenel Ben Ray. Gandalug stood watching the cutting as the busy dwarves of Clan Battlehammer chipped away at the sloping walls of the Great Cavern, cutting the steps that would become the undercity of Mithril Hall. This was the vision of Brunner, Gandalug's third son and Clan's greatest hero, who had led the procession that had brought the 1,000 dwarves to this place.
"You did well in giving it to Brunner,"
the dirty dwarf beside the aged king remarked, referring to Gandalug's decision to award his throne to Brunner and not to Brunner's older brothers. Unlike many of their races, dwarves did not automatically award their inheritance or titles to the eldest of their children, taking the more pragmatic approach of choosing which they thought most fitting. Gandalug nodded and was content. He was old, well past 4 centuries, and tired. The quest of his life had been to establish his own clan, the Battlehammer clan, and he had spent the better part of 2 centuries seeking the location of a fitting kingdom. Soon after Clan Battlehammer had tamed and settled Mithril Hall, Gandalug had begun to see the truth, had begun to realize that his time and his duty had passed. His ambitions had been met, and thus contented. Gandalug found that he could not muster the energy to match the plans his sons and the younger dwarves laid out before him, plans for the great undercity, for a bridge spanning the huge chasm at the complex's eastern end, for a city above the ground south of the mountains to serve as a trading link with the surrounding kingdoms. It all sounded wonderful to Gandalug, of course, but he hadn't the yearning to see it through. The old graybeard, his hair and whiskers still showing hints of their previous fiery red, turned an appreciative look upon his dear companion. Through those 2 centuries, Gandalug could not have asked for a better traveling companion than Crommower Pwent, and now, with one more journey before him, the king who had stepped away from the throne was glad for the company. Unlike the regal Gandalug, Crommower was dirty. He wore a beard, black still, and kept his head shaved so that his huge pointed helm would hold a tight fit.
"Can't be running into things with me helm turning aside now, can I?"
Crommower was fond of saying, and in all truth, Crommower Pwent loved to run into things. He was a battle rager, a dwarf with a singular view of the world. If it threatened his king or insulted his gods, he killed it, plain and simple. He'd duck his head and skewer the enemy, slamming the enemy with his glove nails, with his elbow spikes, with his knee spikes. He'd bite off an enemy's ear or his tongue out, or his head off if he could. He'd scratch and claw and kick and spit. But most of all, he'd win. Gandalug, whose life had been hard in the untamed world, valued Crommower above all others in his clan, even above his precious and loyal children. That view was not shared among the clan. Some of the dwarves, sturdy as they were, could hardly tolerate Crommower's odor, and the squealing of the Battle Rager's rigid armor grated as sourly as fingernails scratching a piece of slate. 2 centuries of traveling beside someone, or fighting beside someone, often in desperate straits, tends to make such facts diminish.
"Come, me friend,"
old Gandalug bade. He'd already said his farewells to his children, to Brunner, the new king of Mithril Hall, and to all his clan. Now was the time for traveling again, with Crommower beside him, as it had been for so many years.
"I go to expand the boundaries of Mithril Hall," Gandalug had proclaimed, "to seek greater riches for me clan."
And so the dwarves had cheered, but more than one eye had been teary that day, for all the dwarves understood that Gandalug would not be coming home.
"Think we'll get a good fighter to you out of this?"
Crommower eagerly asked as he skittered along beside his beloved king, his armor squealing noisily every step of the way. The old graybeard only laughed. The two spent many days searching the tunnels directly below and west of the Mithril Hall complex. They found little in the way of the precious silvery mithril, though, certainly no hints or any veins to match the huge deposits back in the complex proper. Undaunted, the two wanderers then went lower, into the caverns that seemed foreign even to their dwarven sensibilities, into corridors where the sheer pressure of thousands of tons of rock pushed crystals out in front of them in swirling arrays, into tunnels of beautiful colors, where strange lichen glowed eerie colors, into the Underdark. Long after their lamp oils had been exhausted, long after their torches had burned away, Crommower Puent got his fight. It started when the myriad of color patterns revealed by heat-sensing dwarves' infravision blurred to gray and then disappeared altogether in a cloud of inky blackness.
"Me king!"
Crommower yelled out wildly.
"I've lost me sight!" "As have I,"
Gandalug assured the smelly battle rager, and predictably he heard the roar and the shuffle of anxious feet as Crommower sped off, looking for an enemy to skewer. Gandalug ran in the noise of the Battle Rager's wake. He'd seen enough magic to understand that some wizard or cleric had dropped a globe of darkness over them, and that, the old graybeard knew, was probably only the beginning of a more direct assault. Crommower's grunts and crashes allowed Gandalug to get out of the darkened area with relatively few bruises. He caught a quick look at his adversary before yet another globe dropped over him.
"Drow, Crommower!"
Gandalug cried, terror in his voice, for even back then, the reputation of the merciless Dark Elf sent shivers along the backbones of the hardiest surface dwarves.
"I seen him!"
came Crommower's surprisingly easy reply.
"We ought to kill about 50 of the skinny things, laying them flat with their hands above their heads, and use them for window blinds, once they're stiffened."
The sight of Drow and the use of magic told Gandalug that he and the Battle Rager were in tight straits. But he laughed anyway, gaining confidence and strength from his friend's confident manner. They came bouncing out of the second globe, and a third went over them, this one accompanied by the subtle clicking sounds of handheld crossbows firing.
"Will you stop doing that?"
Crommower complained to the mysterious enemies.
"Ow! Why, you're dirty sneaksers! Supposed to skewer you if I can't see you!"
When they came out the other side of this globe, into a wider tunnel strewn with tall stalagmite mounds and hanging stalactites, Gandalug saw Crommower yanking a small dart from the side of his neck. The two slid to a stop. No darkened globe fell over them, and no drow were in sight, though both seasoned warriors understood the many hiding places the stalagmite mounds might offer their enemies.
"Was it poisoned?"
Gandalug asked with grave concern, knowing the sinister reputation of drow darts. Crommower looked at the small quarrel curiously, then put its tip to his lips and sucked hard, furrowing his bushy eyebrows contemplatively and smacking his lips as he studied the taste.
"Yup,"
he announced, and threw the dart over his shoulder.
"Our enemies are not far,"
Gandalug said, glancing all around.
"Bah! They probably runned away,"
snickered Crommower.
Too bad, too. Me helm's getting rusty. Could use a bit of skinny elf blood to grease it proper. Ow!
The battle rager growled suddenly and grasped at a new dart, this one sticking from his shoulder. Following its up-angled line, Gandalug understood the trap. Drow elves were not hiding among the stalagmites, but were up above, levitating among the stalactites.
Separate!
The battle rager cried. He grabbed Gandalug and heaved him away. Normally, dwarves would have stayed together, fought back to back, but Gandalug understood and agreed with Cromauer's reasoning. More than one friendly dwarf had taken a glove nail or knee spike when wild Cromauer went into the fighting frenzy. Several of the dark elves descended swiftly, weapons drawn, and Cromauer Pwent, with typical battle rager intensity, went berserk. He hopped all around, slamming elves and stalagmites, skewering one drow in the belly with his helmet spike, then cursing his luck as the dying drow got stuck. Bent over as he was, Cromauer took several slashing hits across his back, but he only roared in rage, flexed his considerable muscles, and straightened, taking the unfortunate impaled drow along for the ride. With Cromauer's insanity occupying most of the enemy force, Gandalug did well initially. He faced off against two drow females. The old dwarf was quite taken with how beautiful these evil creatures were, their features angled but not sharp, their hair more lustrous than a well-groomed dwarf lady's beard, and their eyes so very intense. That observation didn't slow Gandalug's desire to gash the skin off the drow faces, though, and he whipped his battle axe back and forth, battering aside shields and blocking weapons alike, forcing the females back. But then Gandalug grimaced in pain once, again, and then a third time as some unseen missiles scorched into his back. Magical energy slipped through his fine plate armor and bit at his skin. A moment later, the old graybeard heard Cromauer growl in rage and sputter,
"Damn wizard!"
He knew then that his friend had been similarly assaulted. Cromauer spotted the magic thrower from under the dangling legs of a now-dead drow impaled on his helmet.
"I hate wizards!"
he grumbled and began punching his way toward the distant drow. The wizard said something in a language that Cromauer could not understand, but he should have caught on when the six dark elves he was fighting suddenly parted ranks, opening a direct line between Cromauer and the wizard. Cromauer was not in any rational state, though, consumed as he was by the battle rage, the bloodlust. Thinking to get a clear punch at the wizard, he charged ahead, the dead drow flopping atop his helm. The battle rager took no note of the wizard's chanting, no note of the metal rod the drow held out in front of him. Then Cromauer was flying, blinded by a sudden flash and hurled backward by the energy of a lightning bolt. He slammed a stalagmite hard and slid down to the seat of his pants.
"I hate wizards,"
the dwarf muttered a second time, and he heaved the dead drow off his head, leaped up, and charged again, smoking and fuming. He dipped his head, put his helmet spike in line, and thrust forward furiously, bouncing off mounds, his armor scraping and squealing. The other dark elves he had been fighting came in at all sides, slashing with fine swords, banging with enchanted maces as the battle rager plowed through the gauntlet, and blood ran freely from several wounds. Cromauer's single cry continued without interruption. If he felt the wounds at all, he did not show it. Rage, focused directly on the drow wizard, consumed him. The wizard realized then that his warriors would not be able to stop the insane creature. He called on his innate magic, hoping that these outrageous dwarf things couldn't fly, and began to levitate from the floor. Gandalug heard the commotion behind him and winced every time it sounded as though Cromauer took a hit. But the old graybeard could do little to help his friend. These drow females were surprisingly good fighters, working in perfect concert and parrying all of his attacks, even managing to get a few hits of their own, one slashing with a cruelly edged sword, the other whipping a fiercely glowing mace. Gandalug bled in several places, though none of the wounds were serious. As the three settled into a dancing rhythm, the mace wielder stepped back from the fight and began an incantation.
"No, you don't,"
Gandalug whispered, and he drove hard into the sword wielder, forcing her into a clinch. The slender drow was no physical match for the tough dwarf's sheer strength, and Gandalug heaved her back to collide with her companion and disrupt the spell. On came the old Greybeard, the first king of Mithril Hall, battering the two with his emblazoned shield, slamming them with the foaming mug standard of the clan he had founded. Back down the corridor, Cromauer turned to the side, virtually ran up a stalagmite, and leaped high, his helmet spike driving into the rising wizard's knee, splintering the kneecap and cutting right out the back of the leg. The wizard screamed in agony. His levitation was strong enough to hold them both aloft, and in a blur of pain, the frightfully wounded drow couldn't think to release the spell. They hung weirdly in midair, the wizard clutching his leg, his hands weak with pain, and Cromauer thrashing from side to side, destroying the leg and punching up with his glove nails. He smiled as he sank them deep into the drow's thighs. A rain of warm blood descended over the battle rager, feeding his frenzy. But the other drow were under Cromauer, and he was not that high from the ground. He tried to tuck his legs under him as swords slashed his feet. He jerked then and understood that this would be his final battle, as one drow produced a long lance and stuck it hard into the battle rager's kidney. The mace wielder fell back again, around the corner, and Gandalug closed quickly on the female with the sword. He moved as if he would shield rush again, close in tight, and heave her back as he'd done before. The crafty old dwarf pulled up short, though, and fell low, his wicked axe coming across and sweeping the drow's feet out from under her. Gandalug fell over her in an instant, accepting one nasty stick from the sword and dishing out a head-splitting chop in exchange. He looked up just in time to see a magical hammer appearing in midair before him and whack him across the face. Gandalug shifted his thick tongue about curiously, then spit out a tooth, staring incredulously at the young, and this drow was indeed young, female.
"You got to be kidding,"
the old Greybeard remarked. He hardly noticed that the female had already launched a second spell, pulling the tooth to her waiting fingers with a magically conjured hand. The magical hammer continued its assault, scoring a second hit on the side of Gandalug's head as he straightened over the drow.
"You're dead,"
he promised the young female, smiling wickedly. His mirth was stolen, though, when a resounding scream split the air. Gandalug had seen many fierce battles. He knew a death cry when he heard it, and he knew that this one had come from a dwarf. He spent an instant steadying himself, reminding himself that he and old Cromauer had fully expected that this would be their last journey. When he focused ahead once more, he saw that the young female had retreated farther around the bend, and he heard her chanting softly. Gandalug knew that the other dark elves would soon be at his back, but he determined that they would find their two female companions dead. The stubborn dwarf stalked ahead, heedless of whatever magic the young drow might have waiting for him. He spotted her, standing vulnerable in the middle of the passage, eyes closed, hands by her side as he rounded the corner. In charged the old Greybeard, to be intercepted by a sudden whirlwind, a vortex that encircled him, stopped him, and held him in place.
"What are you about?"
Gandalug roared. He fought wildly against the cunning magic, but could not break free of its stubborn grasp, could not even shuffle his feet toward the devious female. Then Gandalug felt a horrid sensation deep within his breast. He could no longer feel the whipping of the cyclone, but its winds continued, as if they had somehow found a way to pass through his skin. Gandalug felt a tug at his soul, felt as though his insides were being ripped out.
"What are you?"
he started to ask again. But his words disappeared into blabber, and he lost control of his lips, lost control of all his body. He floated helplessly toward the drow, toward her extended hand, and a curious item. What was it? He wondered. What was she holding? His tooth. Then there was only white emptiness. From a great distance, Gandalug heard the chatter of dark elves, and he found one last view as he looked back. A body, his body, lay dead on the floor, surrounded by several dark elves. His body. The dwarf ghost teetered weakly as he came out of the dream, the nightmare, that cruel Ivanel Ben-Ray, the devious young female, had once again forced upon him. Ben-Ray knew that those recollections were the most horrid torture she could exact upon the stubborn dwarf, and she did so often. Now Gandalug stared at her with utter hatred. Here they were, nearly 2,000 years later, 2,000 years of an empty white prison and terrible memories that poor Gandalug could not escape.
"When you left Mithril Hall, you gave the throne to your son,"
Ben-Ray stated. She knew the story, had forced it out of her tormented prisoner many centuries before.
"The new king of Mithril Hall is named Brunner. That was your son's name, was it not?"
The spirit held steady, kept his gaze firm and determined. Matron Ben-Ray laughed at him.
"Contained in your memories are the ways and defenses of Mithril Hall," she said. "Not so different now from when they were then, if I properly understand the ways of dwarves. It is ironic, is it not, that the great Gandalug, the founder of Mithril Hall, the patron of Clan Battlehammer, will aid in the end of the Hall and the Clan."
The Dwarf King howled with rage and grew in size. Gigantic hands reached out for Ben-Ray's skinny, withered throat. The Matron Mother laughed at him again. She held out the tooth, and the whirlwind came at her bidding, grabbing at Gandalug and banishing him back to his white prison.
"And so Drizzt Do'Urden has escaped," Matron Ben-Ray purred, and she was not unhappy. "He is a fortunate excuse, and nothing more."
Ben-Ray's evil smile widened as she sat comfortably in her chair, thinking of how Drizzt Do'Urden would allow her to cement the alliance she would need, thinking how coincidence and fate had given her the means and the method for the conquest she had desired for nearly 2,000 years. Epilogue. Drizzt Do'Urden sat in his private chambers, considering all that had transpired. Memories of Wulfgar dominated his thoughts, but they were not dark images, were not flashes of the alcove wherein Wulfgar had been buried. Drizzt remembered the many adventures, always exciting, often reckless, he had shared beside the towering man. Trusting in his faith, Drizzt placed Wulfgar in that same corner of his heart where he had tucked the memories of Zach Nefane, his father. He could not deny his sadness at Wulfgar's loss, didn't want to deny it, but the many good memories of the straight-backed young barbarian could counter that sadness, bring a bittersweet smile to Drizzt Do'Urden's calm face. He knew that Catterby, too, would come to a similar accepting mindset. She was young and strong and filled with a lust for adventure, however dangerous, as great as that of Drizzt and of Wulfgar. Catterby would learn to smile along with the tears. Drizzt's only fear was for Brunner. The Dwarf King was not so young, not so ready to look ahead to what was yet to come in his remaining years. But Brunner had suffered many tragedies in his long and hardy life, and, generally speaking, it was the way of the Stoic Dwarves to accept death as a natural passing. Drizzt had to trust that Brunner was strong enough to continue. It wasn't until Drizzt focused on Regis that he considered the many other things that had occurred. In Treri, the evil man who had done grievous wrongs to so many was gone. How many in the four corners of Faerun would rejoice at that news? And House Do'Urden, Drizzt tied to the dark world of his kin, was no more. Had Drizzt finally slipped beyond the grasp of Menza Baranzan? Could he and Brunner and Catterby and all the others of Mithril Hall rest easier now that the drow threat had been eliminated? Drizzt wished he could be sure. By all accounts of the battle in which Wulfgar was killed, a Yawclaw, a handmaiden of Loth, had appeared. If the raid to capture him had been inspired simply by Verna's desperation, then what had brought so powerful a minion into their midst? The thought did not sit well with Drizzt as he sat there in his room. he had to wonder if the drow threat was ended, if he might, at long last, finally know his peace with the city he'd left behind. "The emissaries from Settlestone are here," Catterby said to Bruner, entering the dwarf's private chambers without even the courtesy of a knock.
"I'm not for Cairn,"
the dwarf king answered her gruffly. Catterby moved over to him, grabbed him by his broad shoulder, and forced him to turn and look her in the eye. What passed between them was silent, a shared moment of grief and understanding that if they did not go on with their lives, did not forge ahead, then Wulfgar's death was all the more pointless. What loss is death if life is not to be lived? Brunner grabbed his daughter around her slender waist and pulled her close in as crushing a hug as the dwarf had ever given. Catterby squeezed him back, tears rolling from her deep blue eyes. So, too, did a smile widen on the vital young woman's face. And though Brunner's shoulders bobbed with unabashed sobs, she felt sure he soon would come to peace as well. For all he had gone through, Brunner remained the eighth king of Mithril Hall. And for all the adventures, joys, and sorrows Catterby had known, she had just passed her 20th year. There still was much to be done. Thank you for listening to The Legacy, seventh book in the series. Every time I finish one of these books, it's like this cathartic release because you get so pulled into the characters and the story that Salvatore creates. It makes you just want for the next book. Speaking of the next book, it will be The Starless Night, and it will be starting next week. And thank you again to everybody who has gone on this journey with me and listened to all these episodes. I continue to get great feedback on the YouTube videos and lots of emails from people, and it's awesome. It is one community that really enjoys this writer, this character, all of these characters, and this ongoing story. It's hard to believe that it's actually been 4 years since I published the first episode of Homeland, and I just looked at the statistics. It's amazing to me that this podcast has been listened to in over 160 countries around the world. I don't even know how to get my head around that. It's a pretty amazing stat to me, and it's a testament to how popular these books are. Oh, and if you're wondering why this episode came out on Friday and not Saturday, it's because I'm going to be busy all day Saturday and wouldn't get the chance to record. So, rather than have you guys wait until Sunday, I wanted to get you guys hooked up and ready for the weekend with a little Friday mojo. Enjoy, have a great weekend, thank you again, and safe travels.